you take so long to come to me? Oh, baby. And love, love, your love. Tell me, were you hiding from me all the time? Each time I tried to find someone to take your place, it was all in vain. No, their lips were never quite the same. No, baby. When I was kissing someone new, deep inside I was missing you. Oh, baby, you made me fall in love with you. Now I don't know just what I'm gonna do. Oh, honey, I looked out into empty space and all I saw was your.
This is The Spec, and you are listening to 91.5 FM WMFO in Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. Welcome back, everybody, to another glorious Thursday evening. Hope your drive home is going well. Welcome back to The Spec. Welcome back. We're in studio with someone who I have never seen before in my entire life.
Never, not once.
This is going to be interesting because I have no idea who this person is.
Yeah, that's weird.
In all seriousness, welcome Oliver Fox onto The Spec. How you doing today?
I'm doing great. I'm very happy to be here. I've never been in this whole vibe before, so it's... it's a cool place to be.
Yeah, we're a little out of our natural habitat.
I know.
Oliver and I host a sports podcast called Zone Coverage. We record in the digital design studio
Shout out Zone Coverage on Spotify.
Shout out Zone Coverage. Go follow at Zone Coverage Pod if you hadn't right now. But this isn't about Zone Coverage. This is The Spec. We're out of our natural habitat. We're doing our thing. On what a crossover episode it's going to be. I cannot wait. Are you ready for this, Oliver?
I'm so ready. Let's do it.
All right. So for those that are regulars on The Spec, the one thing I always ask my guests is where you grew up, what that was like, and how did that bring you to where you are today? And Oliver, you are a native Massachusettsan from Brookline, right?
Well, if you mean the Native American tribe, no, that's not. but I am from Massachusetts. Yeah, I'm from Brookline, Brookline, Mass, which is sort of a suburb of Boston surrounded on all three sides. So it's probably should be part of Boston, but there's all sorts of political reasons why it's not. But yeah, it was great. I loved growing up in Brookline. I still go back for vacations for the summer. Pretty convenient. My family can visit me here a lot. But I think the story of how my family ended up there is sort of strange. It has something to do with sort of Irish and English assimilation. Nice. Stuff in Brookline out of Boston, but somehow ended up there, and my parents have been living there since 97. I was born in Brookline, never moved anywhere else in my life, so that's all I knew. And the way I ended up at Tufts really was It's sort of been a school that was always on my radar. I was notoriously really like anti Tufts in my college apps process.
Really?
Anyone who knows me well, anyone who knows me well who's listening right now knows this story. But basically, my brother went to Tufts. He's a year older than me.
Gotcha.
Jonah Fox. Shout out Jonah Fox.
Shout out Jonah Fox.
What's up, dog? And I was sort of anti because I was this like sort of trailblazing mentality. I want to have my own experience. But then once I got into Tufts, I just applied just because.
Nice.
And once I got into Tufts, I actually took a harder look at it, and it fit everything I wanted to do. It was the perfect distance away. I always say that it's close enough to Brookline where if I needed to go home, I can pretty easily.
Yeah.
But it's also far enough and like just annoying enough to get to where it's like I can't be bothered all the time by people from Brookline. So we're good. We're good enough on that.
You know, that's fair. I feel like you and I have like had a similar gripe about Tufts in high school, but for different reasons. Like, I mean, I live very nearby.
You're from
the
Arlington school.
So that for me was one of the hardest things to get over, but I took a harder look as well, and I realized there's a lot of good things going on here, including this radio show
Indeed.
That we're doing right now.
I didn't even know that until just now.
So you brought on a lot of songs today to share on air for everybody.
I
want to make sure.
Five.
Well,
I didn't send you a list of like 50.
Well, some people only bring on like one or two, so I'm happy to work with this. Let's get into the first one here.
Let's do it.
Dayglow, Close to You. Why'd you bring on this song?
Oh, I love this song. I actually was sort of a Dayglow hater last year when I heard that Dayglow was going to be coming to Spring Fling last year, and he actually ended up canceling, which was unfortunate, but I was a hater. I was like, oh, I don't like this kind of music. But then last semester, I started really listening to it because I heard a rumor, which was apparently false, that Dayglow was going to be coming back for this year's Spring Fling. And
really?
That rumor, I guess, was wrong because he didn't come back, but I started listening to his stuff, and this one song, Close to You, was so awesome. I love the, like, it's really sort of upbeat and bright.
Yeah.
It's got a pretty sort of vanilla message. Like, it's not that hard to understand what's going on in the song, but I just really like the beat. I really like the sort of synth use in it. It reminds me of like early 2000s, or I guess early 2010s Owl City songs, which I love.
Cool.
So that's what I love about Close to You. There's a lot of other good Dayglow songs. This one's hands down my favorite.
Well, I love this song too, and I can't wait to hear what it sounds like on air. Close to You by Dayglow. Here we go, everyone.
Stuck in between.
That was Close to You by Dayglow. That sounded so good on the speakers. Song. There's just some songs in here that just like sound amazing, and that was one of them. I had a great time.
He's got a nice speaker system in
here. Yeah, no, it's good. I know they just updated everything in here, so it's nice. Anyway, so Oliver, one of your big things, your biggest thing is you're a big writer. You love to write stuff, big sports writer guy, in addition to the podcast we put together every week.
That is true, yeah.
How did you first get into sports writing? Damn. What about it caught your attention?
Sports writing. Well, my first sports column blog, whatever you want to call it, was in seventh grade. I started the little, I forget what it was called. I think it was called Sports Vision. In seventh grade, I started the blog. I think I had three posts. The first one was a 2016 NBA draft review.
Oh my God.
In which I put forward the elite take that aged like sour milk, that the Celtics should have drafted Chris Dunn.
Yeah, I was on that train,
yeah,
too.
Over Jaylen Brown. But I published it, and it was available online for all to see. I don't know if anyone actually read it, but that's my first ever published sports take, which is horrible. Jaylen's much better. I think I also wrote like an MLB midseason review. Manny Machado should have won the MVP, in my opinion. It might have only been two things. But
gotcha.
Yeah, and then I sort of went dormant with sports writing for a long time. It was seventh grade, and then I didn't do any. I worked for my school newspaper in high school, like incessantly, all the time. But
nice.
I was the editor in chief of that. I was an opinions editor. I think I was really sort of highbrow, holier than thou in high school, where I was like, oh, I got to write about important stuff like politics, and sports doesn't matter, and who cares about that? And,
fair enough.
And then when I got to college, I just sort of had become disillusioned by what I saw was sort of a deficiency in political discussion, where the people I was reading and the people I was listening to talking about politics, they either were fun and didn't take it seriously, which I didn't feel like was good, or they were taking it really seriously, but it was no fun. And fair everyone enough. Was just yelling at each other. And so I started writing a sports column for the Tufts Daily called Sports and Society.
Yeah.
The now award-winning column. The other night,
wait, what?
It won a most consistent sports column award from the
Tufts
Daily. That's kind of a joke.
I wasn't even there. Whoa,
I wasn't there either. But it's kind of a joke because I've been writing it for so long, just weekly for 2 years now. But 500 words, just kind of a chill thing.
Yeah.
I've been doing it forever. It's really fun intersecting sports and society. Although this semester, it's sort of fallen. The wheels have fallen off the whole society part, where I've just sort of been talking about sports and psychology and whatever I want
to
talk about.
I don't know if that's totally true.
But yeah, I love doing that. And then just really recently, like this last month, I started a gig at Hardwood Houdini, which is a Celtics fan-sided blog that I'm now writing for, and I've been grinding away at that. I think I have three pieces now, or four pieces up in the last couple days.
What I love about your columns and your writing in particular is you don't just write like strictly, like you love these multidisciplinary kinds of columns. It's not just sports. It's not just politics. It's not just psychology. You like to weave it all together into like very, very eclectic articles, and they're very dense. Like these 500 words doesn't sound like that much, but you put a lot into it, and it shows.
Well,
it's
really painful trying to write 500 words.
Yeah.
Like trying to fit everything I want to talk about into that really constrained area. It's a skill, but it's also limiting. And that's why I wanted to find another outlet for it, and that's why this fan-sided place is so great, because I don't have word limits and I can write however much I want.
Yeah,
which I love. It gives me a little more creative freedom. I can be a little more comedic, which I like in my stuff. Doesn't have to be so dialed in. But yeah, I think that I have a real faith that sports writing can be intellectually serious without necessarily losing all the fun. And I've loved sports my whole life, but I never thought it could be a career. But because I just didn't think it was intellectually rigorous enough. Mm-hmm. But then I sort of decided, well, hey, I can actually make this intellectually rigorous just through my own doing. And you just put a computer in front of me and I can make sports, which I always thought was kind of just like a pastime, into something that's actually serious.
That's great. Yeah. And I mean, we need more people like you, because you see the amount of talking heads.
Tim, I'm so flattered.
Oh yes. we see the amount of talking heads on ESPN First Take and all these debate shows. And it feels like more and more these days it's become what they're saying feels more and more like fabricated, just going for the big headlines. And there feels like there's not as much depth in sports storytelling as there maybe has been in the past.
It's a different kind of content. Like what I'm not I'm not trying to write for people who want sort of heuristic level analysis of sports, yeah, where it's like, I'm assuming is my readers are sort of casually versed in what I'm talking about already. Yep. I don't want there to be a barrier to entry, but when you see like Stephen A. Smith on First Take saying things like, are the Warriors in trouble because they lost game one? I'm like, yeah, they're in trouble. They lost game one. No kidding. Like, yeah, that's obvious to me, but it's not necessarily obvious to other people. And if they want that entertainment style stuff, just sort of like reading, like saying the obvious things, but in an entertaining way, I think that's fine. It's not what I do though. I'm much more interested in what is going on in the locker room. How are the Warriors players processing? How are the Warriors fans processing it? Fan psychology is probably the thing I'm most interested in. Mm. How do sports fans actually think? Because I think that's just a totally under-researched and underwritten about thing. Because it's so robust in how we all look at things and what do we consider a success? What do we consider a failure? How do we evaluate people? Is it entirely fair how we evaluate people? Is my desperate desire for Jason Tatum to take a leap up another level, is that fair to Jason Tatum? Should I not be so critical of him? Is that my right to do as a fan? How does that interact with just normal interpersonal reactions? And I'm just kind of going here, but
no, it sounds great. I love it.
Yeah, I think it's just it's an awesome field to work in, and it's an emerging field. Sports media is
for sure.
Don't listen to anyone. If there's one person listening who is at all interested in sports writing, sports media, every single person who's sort of older in the field is going to tell you it's impossible. They're going to say that, there's no jobs, can't get a job, whatever. Yep. Don't listen to anyone who says that. You
have the inside scoop.
It's a ballooning field, and that sports as a media property is more valuable than it's ever been. So there's just different niches you carve out in it now. And it's not just you're writing sports for the Boston Globe sports section anymore. It's not that simple. So I think it's so great. It's so much fun.
Yeah, and it's the field in general is really interesting because there's so, like, it's expanding in that there's more multimedia aspects going into it. More people creating podcasts like we're doing. More people not just writing but putting stuff out on air. It is an emerging field in that regard, and I feel like I've been especially tuned into that lately as someone who's also interested in media.
And the TikTok generation, too.
The just TikTok, like, social
the
media.
Short-form stuff is, like, people's attention spans, like, what, 5.5 seconds? So we all got to make stuff a little bit shorter.
Yeah, rapidly adapting, but yeah, really, really good stuff. Check out Sports and Society and the Tufts Daily, everybody, and Oliver Fox on Hardwood Houdini, fan-sided, whatever the website is.
HardwoodHoudini.com, yeah.
HardwoodHoudini.com. So let's get another song in here. Let's Wait So Long, Trampled by Turtles. What is this one about?
Well, so I have no idea what this song's about. I'd have to look at the lyrics.
Okay.
But the story behind this song is, so all these songs were actually taken from a Spotify playlist that I made last night, which is called, really aptly called, My Favorite Songs. And I went through all of my liked songs and tried to find songs that ascended to the level of favorite. This song got there because I think it's just it's got a really interesting color to it. It's got this really, you'll hear it, but it's got this banjo going. Sweet. And it kind of reads like a country or a bluegrass song, but it's not necessarily that. It's got a little more of an alternative twang to it. The band was introduced to me by a friend from Brookline who now goes to Wash U.
Cool.
Henry Kessler. He loved Trampled by Turtles, and he went to a concert with them, and we were just talking one night, and he told me, he's like, I'm going to Trampled by Turtles concert tomorrow. And I was like, I'll check this out. And I listened to a couple of their songs. They have another great song called Codeine, which I think it's not written anywhere, but I theorize that song's a spoof of the song Jolene by Dolly Parton.
Nice. I love a good spoof.
But it's about, like, codeine. But this is Wait So Long, I think, is about someone who he has this love interest who doesn't love him, but he's somehow okay with that. And it's this sort of insanity of that space. So let me know if that's totally wrong. I haven't looked at lyrics in a while, so I just kind of like the vibe.
Well, let's find out for ourselves. It's Wait So Long, Trampled by Turtles. Here we go, y'all.
Pretend that I don't love you. You could never pretend that I'm your man. That's exactly the way that I want it. It's exactly the way that I
That was Wait So Long by Trampled by Turtles.
Really,
and
was,
that
yeah.
That really woke me up. Oh my god.
I'm glad I heard you were tired before the show, so I had to give you
you had to kick me into high gear. All right. So we're not really at the halfway point yet, which is when we usually do the PSA, but guess what? I don't care. It's PSA time, everybody. Oliver, what is the PSA today?
Well, Sam, let me tell you. Here's some numbers to think about. Just 10% of the adult population drinks more than 3/4 of all the alcohol consumed in the United States. That's something, right? While 30% of American adults don't drink at all, and another 30% average less than one drink per week. Do the math, that's 60%.
Wow.
The top 10% of American adults, 24 million of us, consume an average of 74 drinks per week.
What?
More than 10 drinks a day.
Really?
Wow. Those are some numbers to think about. A public service message from WMFO in Medford. Tufts Educational Radio.
That shook me. That's a lot more than I thought it was going to
be. Yeah, I'm going to be honest. I didn't actually read that through before reading it live. That's a lot. 74 drinks per week?
That's crazy.
No
dried fruit PSA here today. We got some serious stuff.
We're doing it. Yeah, I thought that would be a little more.
Thank you for a wonderful reading, Mr. Fox. Now, let's talk about something fun for a moment. We're both from the Boston area. We're both diehard Boston sports fans.
Indeed.
Let's just riff for a second. Let's just talk about our favorite Boston sports moments that we've experienced in our lifetimes. Growing up as a kid, what are some moments that have really stuck with you when you watched it on TV? Maybe you were at a game. What's one right off the top of your head?
Well, the number one that I always tell people is the Malcolm Butler interception on the goal line.
Yeah, that was a good one.
That I can tell you every single thing I was doing while that was happening. Like I have that moment in my head just downloaded. Like it's, I know it was my sixth grade birthday party. I had 9 friends over. My birthday is February 13th. I think the Super Bowl was on like February 7th that year.
Cool.
I had 9 friends over. And we were losing in that game. I don't know if you remember.
We
were down 2 possessions, and my mom comes in and says, "Hey, you're not sitting in your lucky chair." So I had to move the seating, everyone had to move their seating arrangement around, so we got the luck going. And this poor guy, Ryan Lim, who went to elementary school with me, he went to Roxbury Latin after that. I think he's at Brown now. Okay. I ran into him at the gym over the summer. It was great. I hadn't seen him in like 7 years.
Dope.
But he had to sit in like the corner, and he was allergic to dust. And
just like me.
And we were like, "Do you want to move?" And he's like, "No, we can't. I can't move, or we're gonna lose." And so he was gutting it out. And then when that was happening, I was like freaking out. And then I can hear it in my head that Al Michaels, the ball is intercepted at the goal line
by Malcolm Butler.
Yeah, and I remember I grabbed my friend Rich Yoon. I have no idea where he ended up. He moved away, I think, in fifth grade. But I grabbed him, or not in fifth, that doesn't make any sense because he was at my house. I grabbed my friend Rich Yoon, and we all ran over to the other couch, and we like slammed into this other couch. And it was this crazy moment. It's just the all-time shift because you felt like it was inevitable that they were going to score. They were on the 1 yard line. They have Marshawn Lynch. It was second down. You're like, they're going to score. They're going to win the Super Bowl. We're going to lose. And then this random guy saves the day. And that's my number one. I don't think anything tops that. I got a couple other good ones.
That's a good one. You know, I was so scared for that moment that I left the room. I couldn't watch.
Sam.
I was a petrified little child. And then I was like standing like shaking in my kitchen by myself while my whole family and a bunch of people were watching. And my dad goes, "Intercepted." And then I'm like,
They threw it? Yeah.
They threw it? No, what? They had, I mean, not everybody's listening as a diehard sports fan. They had a running back who was like unstoppable for the entire season, and they just didn't give it to him.
Maybe the best short yardage runner of the 2010s.
It's just so confusing because we all thought they were going to run it. But anyway, that was a fantastic moment. How about another fantastic moment? Big Poppy's grand slam in the ALCS 2013. I was talking about shaking.
Chef's kiss.
Chef's kiss. I think that's my favorite baseball moment ever. Because I wasn't conscious for 2004, even though I'm sure my dad had a field day with that. And I mean, 2018 was sweet and
you
all,
weren't
but
conscious? Were you
well,
alive?
I was alive, but I'm saying like I wasn't sports conscious yet. I was two, but just that moment when I was sitting at home watching and
game two, right?
Game two, they were down. Big Poppy steps up to the plate, and he had some of those big home runs in the 2004 series, but again, I don't think I had seen a vintage playoff Big Poppy moment before. And when Torrey Hunter just flipped over the fence, and the policeman makes
it that.
The
bullpen cop.
And I met him.
Yeah,
that guy's
a legend.
And he's an absolute legend. It was like a perfect moment, that was one of the craziest crowds I've ever seen go that nuts. Such a great moment. Another great moment that I was actually at.
Wait, hold on. I gotta see if I can get this right. I think the Joe Buck line in that, I can also hear that one. It's like Ortiz deep drive right field,
back at the wall, tie game.
Yeah, that's
Big
it.
Poppy the grand slam.
That's it, yeah.
It's funny because I've seen like so many, like my town put this like little compilation during the pandemic of like favorite sports moments, and they're just like different community members like reenacting Torrey Hunter flipping over the wall.
This is why I love the fan psychology part of sports writing, because look at this. We have all these crazy stories. We
love it.
Everyone processes these awesome moments differently.
It's great. There really isn't. It's the cliche, but there really isn't anything like sports, and that's why we keep coming back to it, because it brings us all together. And another Red Sox moment that I can just think of off the top of my head that I was actually at was the 2021 ALCS, where I was at the Red Sox Astros game, and Kyle Schwarber hit a grand slam.
Yeah.
And that was the craziest. I've been to two playoff games in my life. It was that game, and I went to a Celtics first round playoff series. That moment, being in that crowd, I was like standing right in front of an Astros fan. It was the funniest thing in the world, watching his face as Schwarber hit it. The ball went like right next to us.
Huh.
And it was just the most electric thing in the world. There really isn't anything like, I give baseball some crap sometimes, but there really isn't anything like the home run ball.
Well, it's the crack of the bat.
Yeah.
I've thought about this a lot. There's a specific sound that a home run makes that is just unparalleled in the rest of sports. Like, think about it. What's the most exciting play in hockey? Well, it's like a goal.
Because
you can really only do one thing in hockey. But goals don't really have good sounds, so they had to add a honk horn. So baseball's got the crack of the bat that's just unparalleled in its quality, and And even football, like a touchdown, it doesn't make any sounds. Not that many interesting sounds.
No, exactly.
Like, it's the sound. You got to have the sound. Like a swish is good.
Swish is good.
But the crack of the bat is better. The crack of the bat is this. Yeah.
Well, do you have any more favorite sports moments before we move on?
I mean, I could do rapid fire. I was at a Red Sox playoff game. Totally forget. We were losing to the Astros. We ended up getting eliminated in the game I was at. But Rafael Devers, when he was really young, hit an inside the park home run.
Oh yeah,
that was crazy. One of my least favorite sports moments was last year. We were at, I think you were at this game as well, right? The 28-5.
We were at the same game.
Yeah, we were at the same game, but 28-5, the Red Sox lost to the Blue Jays.
That was just funny.
Yeah, we lost by 3 touchdowns and an extra point or a field goal. That was terrible. And then I think Bruins losing last week's pretty bad, but that's recency bias.
Yeah, that is recency. You know what's one moment, a shared experience that you were at this, right? In the wild card, Yankees, Red Sox wild card.
I wasn't at the game, but I was watching.
You were watching with...
Yeah, we were watching.
It together. That was just a fun moment because, quite honestly, I've been surrounded by Red Sox fans my entire life.
You're having some Yankees fans in the room.
And having some Yankees fans, I mean, that's one interesting thing about college, too, is like you're surrounded by just overwhelmingly one fan base. And yeah, there's some other fans here and there, but in college, you really get a lot of different fans of all sorts of teams.
Well, that
teams.
Was fun because we got to see just how lame Yankees fans actually are and how just that whole institution is horrible and just doesn't have anything.
Shout out Ethan Dunn, Jackie Fluner.
Yeah.
But it was really fun because the room was, it wasn't half and half. It was mostly Red Sox fans and then a few
like
Yankees fans.
It was not very close.
But it was a great moment watching. It was a huge group watch, and Bogaerts hitting the home run off of Garrett Cole at the beginning of the game was really cool.
I will never get sick of watching Garrett Cole fail in everything in his life.
Oh, this is. I could do this all day, but we have limited time, so I'm going to move on.
It's unfortunate.
Superstition by Stevie Wonder. You have a story for this one.
Tell me about it. So, this is a song that I've always, throughout my whole life, loved to sing. It's in like a really fun range, sort of go with. You can't sing the song all the time because it takes a lot of effort out of you to actually do.
Yep.
But the story behind this song is when I was in 10th grade, I had the best teacher ever, the best history teacher.
Nice.
He is a lot of the reason why I am a history major here.
Cool.
He really made me love it. And he, on the last day of class, instead of like doing something special or just like letting us have the day off or bring pizza or whatever, he decided that what he was going to do with our last class was, I think we just did some like housekeeping stuff, but then the last thing we did in this legendarily awesome history class was he played the song Superstition by Stevie Wonder in order to explain to us that it has the best horn line of any song in history.
That checks out.
And that the horn line was so legendary that in high school, he learned to play the trumpet specifically so he could play this horn line, and then he never got to play it.
Oh, wait, what?
I know. So he's mad to this day that he never got to play the Superstition horn line. And ever since then, specifically the horn line has held a special place in my heart.
Stevie Wonder is like a master at like horn lines and like openings to songs, you know, like I think also
he had great
Golden Lady.
Great session players.
She lovely? Anyway, we're both Stevie Wonder fans. Superstition, Stevie Wonder. Here we go. Shout out your history teacher.
Jonathan Bassett.
Shout out Jonathan Bassett.
How you be listening right now. Shout out.
Shout out. Here we go.
Yeah.
That was The Great Superstition by Stevie Wonder. Always, never fails to be a bop every single time.
Certified bop.
So, something else. Let's veer away from the sports talk for a section. Something else that you like to do, Oliver, is you like to sing.
That's true,
a big,
yeah,
big thing of yours. When did you start getting into singing, and what do you do? Are you in a chorus? What's going on with that?
I mean, I've been into singing before I can even remember. Like, it was just always something that I did. I think that you could probably ask my parents probably have a better answer than that than me. The earliest I can remember, allegedly I was in some sort of church cherub choir. No, nice. I don't go to church. Never really particularly enjoyed church. We stopped going to church when I was probably 11. But I allegedly was in a cherub choir. I actually don't remember that at all. The first choir I can really remember singing in, and maybe someone could jog my memory on an earlier one, is a fifth grade chorus. I had a super, super high voice when I was in 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. And then by 7th grade and 8th grade, it sort of went down. And then I tried out for, the audition-only chorus in my high school in my freshman year. And it was pretty special if a freshman made it or something. But and then I ended up getting into that, and I did that 4 years. And it was super fun. I was so jazzed when I got in. I'm like, oh my God, I'm the coolest, guys. I got into this special chorus, and it's not that big of a deal, but it was super fun. That sort of introduced me to a little higher level of choral singing.
Cool.
And then one of my first orders of business, once I came to Tufts, was figure out what the choral scene was like here. I've never been I was in an a cappella group in high school. I actually did audition for the Beelzebubs my freshman fall. I did not get a call back to them. It's okay, guys.
Missing out.
I'm not mad. Not mad at all. They're actually wonderful people. A bunch of them were in the tenor section of choir this semester.
Oh, really?
Shout out Sid, True, and Roan.
Okay,
great,
nice.
Guys.
Nice.
Just fabulous group of people. So I do the Tufts Chamber Singers. Been doing that for 4 semesters. That's one of my no-brainer classes. I just throw that in there. If you're a class that meets at that time, sorry, we're not doing it because I'm taking that class. Jamie Kirsch is the director. He's fantastic.
Awesome.
This semester we did the entire Mozart Requiem. That was put on April 17th, I believe. And it was just really fun to do. Had a whole orchestra, professional soloists, just a whole production. We were recording that somewhere. I don't know where it'll be, but it's just a great, great time overall.
Exciting.
Singing has always been something that I could never stop doing it. It annoys people around me. That plus whistling really takes the cake. And I whistle all the time. And my mom hates, capital H hates whistling.
Professional whistler.
Well, to the point where I'm ruthlessly repressed in my own household where I can't whistle. I'm just not allowed to. Over the summer,
banned whistling?
Yeah, no, if I start whistling in my house, my mom's going to yell at the... Hopefully she's listening right now, so she can actually
take a stand.
She'll yell up to the second floor where in my room, she's like, stop whistling! and I'll just get screamed at for whistling. And so in college, I was finally able to let loose and let my whistling... talents develop. So
yeah, no shade to your family. I'm glad there's some people here that appreciate your whistling
all the shade, every ounce of shade you got.
Are you more in terms of singing, are you more interested in like classical music? Yeah, yeah. Or are you more of a modern
I've always been a jazzy classical guy. Yeah. I used to be more sort of jaded and dismissive of like jazz and pop singing and rock singing. I just thought it was sort of like a lesser way of doing it. I don't think that anymore. It's just it's a different style. I always felt like the people who like intentionally stylize their voice, it was never what I wanted to do. I only have one gear. It's just however trying as hard as I possibly can, which a lot of times lends itself the best to classical singing. In high school, I was really loud. Everybody knew that in my choirs that I was really, really loud. Which I don't regret to this day, although I think I may have rubbed some people the wrong way with how loud I was in high school. Learned that afterward. But yeah, singing's always been just a big part of my life. I have no idea how I'm going to continue it after college, but I'm not just going to just give up on it.
If you want ideas, there's like this really inspiring story. A couple friends of mine who are also singers in high school, they joined this like barbershop. Like, it's based around the idea of barbershop quartet songs, but it's just, like, a huge local community choir of, like, guys from, like... I think they were the youngest guys in the choir, and then it's, like, everyone ranging from, like, then to, like, 80-something-year-olds. And I feel like one of the great things about singing is there's something really beautiful about just coming together with, like, all sorts of community members, people from different backgrounds, different places, and just... singing the same song all together in harmony. It's a great feeling.
It's a collaborative process.
Exactly.
But that's the thing I love the most about classical music is sometimes it's so difficult and trying to piece everything together. And it's like classical music is intentionally complicated. It's not complicated for some sort of artistic reason. There's actual rules as to why it has to move in certain directions with contrapuntal motion. And there's that I really like the ways that creates a rehearsal process that's so interesting. So
yeah, and something I haven't thought, because I miss singing. I mean, I sang in high school, and I feel like I want to get into it some more. It's also
it's
really
not too
helpful.
Late to join, Sam.
Hey,
every semester.
I mean, who knows? But there's something about learning how to like properly, sounds silly, but like properly breathe, and like as someone who's like using my voice all the time, whether doing this or lots of different things, it's good to know how to like use your voice properly, learn how to not strain it, learn how to, you know, project properly.
Yeah,
and there's
sing,
a lot of technicality that goes into
enough,
it as well.
You're gonna get better whether you like it or not, and
exactly.
That's the coolest thing is that it doesn't matter if I'm trying to get better or not. It's just reps over and over again. You're gonna keep getting better without even noticing.
It's more useful for lots of different aspects of your life than I thought it was going to be.
Great party trick, too.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, next song.
We got two more?
Two more. Disloyal Order of Water Buffalo, Fallout Boy.
Oh, yeah.
How about this one?
This one's great. This is one of my favorite Fallout Boy songs. I had a hard time picking between them, but I had to pick a Fall Out Boy song because they're probably my favorite group ever. Listen to their music all the time. I know that's kind of like anyone who's actually into punk music is like rolling their eyes so far it's like come all the way around the back of their head because it's not real punk. It's sort of like poppy punk, pop rock kind of stuff. But
cool.
I love their vibe. I love Patrick Stump's voice. This song is, I believe it's from
Folie à Deux.
Yeah. This is an older song from, I think it's 2009, when this one came out. I don't actually have any idea what this is about. Again, there's all sorts of different motifs in there. You can look up the Genius lyrics, obviously, but what I like, there's this anthem chorus where he says detox just to retox, and I think that's a interesting line. Fall Out Boy has these really sort of it's kind of like how certain rappers say these really obvious plays on words, but I think they really enjoy the messing with words in a fun way, that the words detox and retox. I'm not even sure if retox is even a word, but they made it rhyme, and you'll hear it in the song. But yeah, I think it was more emblematic of my just how Fall Out Boy is really important to my musical my music, the Oliver Fox musical lexicon is full of Fall Out Boy. So,
well, I'm glad it'll be on full display here. Disloyal Order of Water Buffaloes, Fall Out Boy.
No idea why it's called this, by the way.
Yeah,
no one knows.
Well, your own interpretation. It's up to your own interpretation. Here we go, y'all.
I'm coming apart at the seams, pitching myself leads in other people's dreams. Now buzz, 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 Doc, there's a hole where something was. Doc, there's a hole where something was.
Disloyal Order of Water Buffaloes, everybody.
Listen to it through. Still don't know what
it's called. I was just about to say, I still don't know why it's called that, but it sounds lovely. So thank you for bringing it on the show. So we're getting close to the end, everybody. Thank you so much, as always, for listening. Let's end with a little bit. Let's look forward at the end of this show today, Oliver. What are some things you're looking forward to maybe in the immediate future in the summer? or in the long term? What are some things you're looking forward to?
I mean, I think the thing I'm looking forward to the most is going to Germany next year, studying abroad.
Very fun.
Yeah, we didn't talk about German on this.
Oh, crap.
No, it's fine. Not a big deal.
Sorry. But, yeah. No, go for it right now.
No, so I just randomly took German in college. I was just like, oh, this fits my schedule. I'll just throw German in here. And I basically just have been going for now four semesters. And,
cool.
And I applied to go to Tübingen, which is near Stuttgart in Germany. And I'll be there next spring. And it's going to be great. I have very little like living away from home experiences. You know, I've never moved.
Yeah.
I never went to sleepaway camp. I don't really go to college that far away from my actual house. So,
yeah. Similar boat.
It'll be another. It'll be an adjustment. But I'm so excited. It's gonna be awesome.
Yeah, I can't wait. What are you most looking forward to specifically about the experience? Just are you gonna be with a host family?
No,
what?
So I'm gonna be staying in a dorm. I think the thing I'm most excited is just seeing different stuff. And I know I know that sounds like rudimentary, but gonna be honest, Medford, Somerville, I love you. Been around here a lot in the last 2 years. Same sites. You got to go to class. Can't like go explore places. There's lots of amazing sites around the Boston area, but I've lived in this area my whole life. And so going to a different environment and a different climate, different countries, traveling over the place. I just want to see stuff. I want to go. I want to like walk up a mountain and look down at stuff. Look at trees. Look at
big mountain guy.
Rocks.
Yeah.
I don't even know what we're looking at, but. I go to cities, go around places. I want to go to Greece. That's on the list.
Oh,
I don't know why Greece specifically, but
I'm
go
with
to Greece.
You.
That's I want to go there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to be in Italy next year too.
That's awesome.
So that same boat as you. I mean, it'll be a big adjustment for me as well. But I'm also excited to get away
Italian?
For a little bit. But you know, we're working on it. And I'm gonna like take Italian classes more and. We'll get there.
I have a 5-week intensive German program.
Yeah, it seems like you're a little more ahead on the German game than I am the Italian game.
Totally.
Like, I know it, but like a little more ahead on the German game. But I'm excited for you. I think that's going to be great.
Yeah.
Europe meetup. I know some other, a bunch of people are studying abroad in the spring. And I mean, like, people are hopping around different countries. Like, who knows? Maybe I'll run into you there.
Maybe.
But awesome. That's super exciting. And so, Oliver. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Of course.
What a fun little fancy crossover we had. We're usually over once again in the digital design lab recording Zone Coverage, our podcast. Make sure to follow at Zone Coverage Pod on Instagram and follow along on Spotify and soon some other platforms as well. We're going to expand our coverage.
This is so much fun, Sam. Whenever you don't have a guest lined up, just give me a call. I'm here. This is awesome.
Let's do it. Yeah. I love like. And again, we could like riff about sports forever. I feel like the Boston sports.
But we have a podcast for that.
We
did it for like 45 minutes here anyway. So
yeah, exactly.
Like,
exactly. Yeah. So, but thanks again for coming on,
of course,
Oliver. And thanks everybody for listening. I really appreciate you tuning in. This is The Spec, and you're listening to 91.5 FM WMFO in Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. Not sure if I'm going to be on next week. I'm still trying to figure it out. We're getting towards the end of the spring schedule, which means I'm going to be off for the summer. I'm sad to be leaving the radio waves
I'm
for the summer.
I'm literally crying,
but,
Tim. I'm bawling my eyes out.
It's going to be so sad, but we'll be back in the fall. It's going to be a great time. More guests, more live bands, more reviews of artists, more shenanigans. Sometimes I've gotten a live band on. I've gotten some live music, you know, like
that's
Jeremy
awesome.
Grunat. Yeah, I love bringing on live music. This time's harder to get some bands on, so I'm hoping to get a different time next semester. But lots of more fun shenanigans coming your way on The Spec. So hope everybody's doing well. Stay warm. It's going to get warm soon and sunny. And we're almost
at the
summer. Good luck with your finals if there's any students listening. And the last song is House Wren by Owl City. You want to say a quick word about that before we head out?
This song is just wonderful. I'll just let people listen to it. It's kind of bird-based. If you don't like birds, this might be tough. Owl City, I'm a big Owl City fan. Might be the number one Owl City fan left in the world. Whenever I say, oh, I like Owl City, everyone's like, oh, that's the guy who made Fireflies like 100 years ago. Yeah, it's true, he did. But there's a lot of other songs by Owl City that are great. Just released a new album. Kind of mid, gonna be honest. Not the best album ever.
Womp womp.
But this one is from his 2018 album, Cinematic, which was really, really good.
Let's hear it. House Wren, Owl City. Have a great week, everybody, and see you soon.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Thanks, Oliver.
I'm a house wren, hunting for a house. I haven't found one, I'm on the lookout. for a home to call my own, a private residence. Through the grapevine, I heard an empty gourd is hanging up somewhere on some old lady's porch. I'll pack my bags and off I'll go to my new humble abode. I'm gonna sing at the top of my lungs, 'cause it's a beautiful day. I'm gonna spread my wings, 'cause as far as I know, I am halfway home. I'm a house wren who needs a summer home, a country farmhouse or a quiet bungalow. Not too big and not too small, first-rate real estate. I got my eyes peeled for a window box, an old tin can, a boot or a flower pot. I'll pack my bags and off I'll go to my new humble abode. I'm a house wren, still hunting for a house, but I got a song and a lot to sing about. I'll pack my bags and off I'll go, because you know I'm gonna sing at the top of my lungs, 'cause it's a beautiful day. I'm gonna spread my wings, I'm on top of the world and it's a beautiful thing. Mm-hmm.